coming to you once again from the IAL podcast studio in the Baltimore, Maryland, worldwide headquarters of Inside Lacrosse. It's the D-Fly and Dixie Show, featuring Inside Lacrosse and Big Ten Network analyst and my Homewood homeboy, Mark Dixon. I am your host, Dan Flynn. Dix, let's get it. Welcome to another week of the D-Fly and Dixie Show. And you are enjoying some of my sister's lasagna that I promised you. And then she came through. She showed up on Easter Sunday with two lasagnas.
Big time.
One for the family and one for us. I took one and I just put it right in my car.
Right.
Put it right in the car.
Wait a minute.
Because there's no way that it was going to get out of the house alive.
This is so good. So thank you, Tracy. This is delicious. I appreciate it. I owe you one. I mean, it's like, I'm not a big Italian. I don't like to eat Italian food all that much. But a good piece of lasagna every now. I can't remember the last time I had lasagna. But just the pasta is cooked perfectly. There's ground beef and the cheese. What kind of cheese do you use? And there's a mozzarella.
Ricotta.
The cheese and the ground beef melting, and then put the sausage. Puts it over the. There's sausage in here, and it just put it over the top.
Yeah,
it is so good.
When you find a piece of sausage, it's like finding buried treasure.
Oh my god!
It just makes it sing.
So I'm just going to finish this up as we continue. Hopefully, it won't be too.
So how was your Easter, Dix? You had a good weekend. I know you were in Piscataway.
Mm-hmm.
Did the family come with you, or was it just you and
no
Joe B on the?
Just me and Joe B. We
did you give him a ride?
No. Joe had to go early, and he actually had to stay at a different hotel next to the airport because he had to fly out first thing in the morning to go to St. Louis. The Caps were played the Blues, and beat them. But Easter weekend was good. Saturday I spent doing a lot of yard work and watching a lot of lacrosse. Saturday was a good lacrosse day. Maryland Michigan game. Watched Notre Dame Syracuse as well. Denver Georgetown was also on. Watched a little bit of that game. So it was a good Saturday. Relaxed because the next day went to my parents' house for brunch and enjoyed ourselves there. And then I left right from there to drive up to New Jersey. So I didn't check into the hotel. Called them to let them know I was going to be late. And I don't know if you know this or not, but New Jersey, so the Piscataway, New Brunswick area, got about 4 or 5 inches of snow.
When?
Monday morning. So, you know, I get done the game, and it's like 9:30, 10 o'clock, and I'm thinking to myself, I know it's going to snow, and I already planned to leave at 6 a.m.
So you had a hotel room.
I had a hotel.
Gotcha.
And I'm like, do I drive home now and beat the weather, or do I just, you know, because it was 60 degrees. And so when I pulled into High Point Solutions Stadium, it was 60 degrees. Now, the Rutgers fans were out tailgating. The Hopkins fans were tailgating. It was a gorgeous, beautiful day. It was around 4:30 on Sunday afternoon. And I'm like, even our stage manager was like, it's not going to be that bad. It's 60 degrees out. Well, guess what? The weather on Monday sucked.
It got cold fast.
Oh, my God. It got cold fast. I woke up at 5 a.m., looked out. It was snowing, but it really wasn't laying. So I'm like, oh, the temperature, by the time I got it, I think I left at 5:45. It was like an inch on the ground. So I'm like, this is ridiculous. So the side roads were awful. And then the turnpike was an adventure as well. I must have passed 6 or 7 accidents and serious accidents, like where cars were really messed up.
Was the snow sticking to the ground?
It was sticking to the ground. It was slushing up.
Wow.
It was very slippery. I mean, it was tough. But by the time I got to exit, so Piscataway is exit, God, what is it? Is it 9?
The Brunswick start around exit 9, I think.
Yeah, so 9:10-ish. This lasted until about exit 2. And then once I got to exit 2, it was like just rain and nothing. So I was like, this was a really concentrated band. Of course, I'm watching the weather in my hotel room when I got back to the hotel, and it's all New York, and they're talking about Yankees opening day, which was postponed because it snowed. So I think New York actually may have gotten more snow. It was enough snow to cancel opening day. So it was an adventure, but the game was fantastic. The Sunday Night Lacrosse is the bomb. I mean, it really is.
So let's get into this. I certainly enjoyed watching it and having something to look forward to at the end of like my weekend. 7 o'clock game on Big Ten Network. Hopkins rallies late, takes a lead. Rutgers comes back. And then Kyle Maher, the game winner, rips the game winner off a feed from Shaq Stanwyck, who was sort of working from behind the cage. Six straight wins for the Blue Jays.
Yeah.
And a big Big Ten win for him.
Only about, I say only just because they had about 5,500 fans for Syracuse Rutgers. I think there was about 3,500 at this game, but they were loud. And
that's a really good crowd for Easter Sunday.
It is. And the weather was decent, but it was getting colder. I mean, I think at face-off it may have been 52 degrees, and by the time the game was over, it was probably like, you know, it was like 40, 41. This was an intense game, and there was a lot of chirping going on that field between the players. There was a lot of trash talk going on. Every play was just guys were chirping and getting after each other. A lot of spirit, a lot of intensity. Big Ten lacrosse, man. I mean, it was just it was fantastic. And Hopkins made the extra play. Controversy in this game. A goal in the third quarter I don't think should have been allowed.
Hopkins scored after the shot clock
had expired.
I agree with you. I don't think that goal should have counted.
So when you think about college basketball, the clock is in sync with the backboard. So that it's kind of easy to tell if a ball, like if the shot clock has expired when it's been released or not. You know, you get that big red thing lights up or whatever color it is that lines the backboard. You don't necessarily have that in lacrosse.
Yeah, you're right. You have to, because you're focused on the same thing. Everyone's sort of looking at the hoop and you can see the player and the hoop because the field's smart. But in lacrosse, you got that shot clock that's way usually on the netting or on the scoreboard posted behind it. Your eyes have to basically be in two places at the same time.
Yeah, and unbeknownst to me.
But on TV, it's right there in the corner.
Yep, and unbeknownst to me, there was a horn that sounded. So when a shot clock does expire, there is somebody, whoever's operating the shot clock, can hit a horn. But again, it's not synced up with the shot clock. And the other thing,
it's a manual thing. You're saying.
It's a manual thing. And the other thing that is problematic is, like, let's say when you yell shot clock, even the best shot clock operators might be a half second, maybe a full second slow on hitting that button.
Sure, because sometimes you're not waiting for the ref to do it. You have to observe it and then set the shot clock.
Exactly. So there's a lot of
teams could get like 32 or 33 seconds almost.
Could, yeah. And we didn't hear it, you know, because we're in the broadcast. We've got our headphones on and all that other thing. So I did not hear a horn, but apparently a horn went off, and people in attendance that have reached out to me said that horn clearly sounded before the player released the ball. I believe it was Cole Williams that scored that goal. Was it Cole or was it Shaq? It was one of those two. But you know, look, it was a big moment because obviously Hopkins won by one, but Rutgers came right back out and answered pretty quickly. So it wasn't like that goal opened up the floodgates.
Well, can referees look at that?
No. There's no instant replay. None. There for timing issues in the NCAA tournament, there are mechanisms for replay, but not during the regular season. And you watched the game, right?
Yes.
I guess obviously you heard my reaction.
Yeah.
We need instant replay
in
college lacrosse. We need instant replay for timing issues, for crease violations. Was he in the crease? Was he not? Was he pushed? Was he not? Was he grounded? Was he not? And in certain cases, offsides, those kinds of things. But by and large, like that would have been a perfect time for instant replay.
I agree.
And we don't have enough time to go into all the intricacies and the limitations and that and the other thing. But I just think that, you know, and maybe it's a moot point if the shot clock comes in at a hard, fast number. But, you know, I think we've talked about this before. The biggest sticking point is the coaches can't agree on what's the amount of time. Is it 60? Is it 75? Is it 90? Do you have 20 to clear? Does it start when you get possession on your defensive end? Does it start when you cross midfield? This is what people, I don't know if they have a grasp on this. You've got all these coaches, and it's not just the 71 Division I men's lacrosse coaches. It's D2, it's D3, it's JUCO. All these guys have different opinions, And until they can settle on one thing, that could be the biggest sticking point.
I was very impressed with Rutgers. I hadn't seen them play a lot this season, and they have athleticism all over the field.
They have attitude. They have athleticism. They're very talented. I thought their interior defense let them down in the second half. Hopkins, Patrick Frazier, 3 goals, all off ball, cutting, and all the goals were scored within two yards of the crease. So credit to him because he was really in a shooting slump. But I love Jules Henningberg. I think he's a terrific player. I think he's one of the better players in the country. And that's saying a lot when you have probably, 500 attackmen that could make the first, second, and third team All-Americans in the HM. I really like Casey Rose in the midfield. But the guy that I really took affinity to is Gallagher, the little midfielder for Rutgers. He was just great all night and reminded me of like a mini Michael Sowers. Just a terrific player, freshman out of Atlanta. And I like their defense. They're rangy.
The goal that the defenseman scored in transition was just fantastic.
That was great. That was Garrett Michaeli. Just
beautiful lacrosse and fun.
That just sort of defines the whole night. And that kind of defines Sunday lacrosse on BTN. We've just had so many great games. And to kick off the 2018 Sunday night on BTN, it couldn't have worked out any better. Now, the game winner, Kalmar, I mean, what a catch and shoot.
Yeah.
Got run over by, I think it was Scarpello that got to him just a second late, but still knocked him off his line.
Handling that pass was...
It was great. And credit Shaq for getting a step on his man. And Rutgers, I think in that situation you had to slide, because how many times have you seen Shaq come around right or left, right above goal line extended, and just do that little fadeaway shot that is, high to high or high to low? He's made a career off of scoring goals in that fashion. So I think, the slide went, that's a great win for Johns Hopkins, and that's a tough, tough loss for Rutgers, who coming into that game were 19-1 in their last 20 games. The one being
at home, you mean?
At home,
yeah.
And that one being, it was the Easter game last year when they lost to Maryland. Connor Kelly scored the game winner in the third overtime, I believe.
Triple overtime.
So big win for Hopkins.
Hey, before we move on to the next game, I want to take one of our listener calls who has a question about Hopkins offense. And this is
early in the call. We're getting
fits into this portion right here.
Okay.
And the game winner. And this is Bradley from Elk Ridge.
Firstly, great win by the Blue Jays against Rutgers on Sunday night. So my question being is, we always have great success when we're able to get the ball behind the Stanwyck and get the heads turning of the defense and the goalkeeper. So why aren't we making that a consistent part of the Hopkins lacrosse game as opposed to dodging from the halfway line straight down the line of the field?
I actually know this guy, and I know he watches a lot of Hopkins lacrosse, and he's always asking me, why doesn't Hopkins initiate their offense from behind the goal more often, especially with Shaq Stanwyck? He's so good at it.
I think it's a great question. I think the one thing is, so the biggest criticism of the Hopkins offense, if you go back to the years of John Rannigan, John Greeley, Lee Coppersmith, was that everything was initiated from up top. Everything was big midfielders running, dodging downhill.
That started more with like Rabel and
but they were having success with that.
Who was Rabel's line mate? Two brothers, Pizer,
yeah, Stephen Pizer, Greg Pizer,
and Michael
Pizer were the three Pizer brothers. But it was Stephen that was the line mate with Rabel.
Man, they were good.
I mean, Kyle Harrison, Adam Doniger did it.
Doniger,
but. Around the time frame that
last Thursday, Kyle Harrison, have some more lasagna dicks, did a throwback Thursday where I think he was a freshman or something. He passes the ball to Adam Doniger, and he just rips a shot from the midfield. And I don't know where he found that highlight clip or something, but it was really cool. So some old school Hopkins.
That might have been in the first round of the NCAA or quarterfinals.
No, it was at Homewood Field.
UMass.
It was at Homewood Field.
Doniger had like,
might have been.
Doniger had like 8 goals. Or it wasn't 8, but it was like Doniger was just on fire.
Well, Kyle just shakes his guy and then passes across the field from the left wing, passes to the right wing where Doniger is just set up, sets his feet.
Yeah.
Just rips one. Anyway. Yeah. Back to answering this question from Brad from Elk Ridge, Maryland.
I just finished that lasagna, too. It was so
Do you need a nap? Do we need to take a break?
I might need another piece. I mean,
well, I'll bring you some more, man.
Please do. I think you just don't want to be too predictable. You know, you don't want to initiate. I think Hopkins' offense is balanced enough and dynamic enough to start from anywhere on the field. The other thing you have to consider is Shaq Stanwyck's dealt with a lot of injuries throughout his career. Some are known and some are unknown. So
you mean publicly?
Yeah.
He's played through a lot of bumps and bruises.
He really has. So I think one is predictability. Two is health of Stanwyck. And three is just, I think overall, it's the versatility of the Johns Hopkins offense. You know, I don't think Shaq makes that play if Hopkins was running through him 70% of the time in that game, 60% of the time in that game even. You know, you need Tinney. He can initiate. Cole Williams is becoming, I mean, he already was a monster. Now he's becoming, you know, just complete. He had three assists the other night. And how about, you know, Connor DeSimone, terrific shooter. They've got weapons. You know, they've got weapons, and I think they're just trying to utilize each of them, you know. And maybe not going to the well too many times with Stanwyck, you know, allows a play like he made at the end of regulation to happen.
So, Dix, another thing that came out this week during this broadcast is I think you mentioned the term sky whammy. So our publisher, Terry Foy, had a tweet about what the origin of the sky whammy is.
Terry would never use that word. The word that he used was the etymology.
I was dumbing it down for us.
Okay.
Because this is apparently like the Hopkins podcast right now, because this is all we talked about so far is lasagna and Hopkins lacrosse. But before we get to the other games, what's the history of that?
So the person who came up with sky whammy is my former teammate, Chris Macon.
Oh, Mako.
So Mako is a Gilman guy, and he went to Hobart his freshman year and transferred into Johns Hopkins. So Mako's a good dude. And I haven't caught up with Chris in quite some time. But in addition to his sense of humor and funny sayings, the biggest thing that you remember about Mako is his voice. Mako has a very high-pitched voice. So I'd be like, hey, Dixie, what's going on, man? Hey, man, what's up? Hey, what's happening? But I will never forget it. And most of the guys... When Terry asked the question, I replied, Chris Macon, anybody who played for Hopkins during that time period, class of 95 or, you know, a little before, a little after, will back me up on this.
Yes.
And sure enough, Terry Reardon, Jay Penn, a couple other guys from Hopkins past were like, absolutely, it's Mako. And he would be like, Mako would be like, Dix, I'm going to get him with the sky whammy. And then when they're least expected, I'm going to get him with the low to high lefty riser. So Mako was a lefty middy and just a tremendous shooter.
He was. He was an extra man stalwart.
He was.
I don't know how to describe it.
But he also ran a regular shift, especially in 95, and could score goals. You know, he was a good off ball. You know, he could deliver it. He had all points of release. You know, he had sidearm.
And again, one of the reasons why he... you know, was running midfielder and extra man is because there was Terry Reardon and Brian Piccola and Dave Marr, three, you know, Hopkins legends. Terry Reardon and Brian Piccola were first team All-American the same year. So
yeah, and you also had...
It wasn't like Macon wasn't a starting caliber type of player.
Think about the
All-Americans in front of him.
Think about the middies as well. I mean, Peter Jacobs and Milford Marchant were both All-Americans during that time, you know, so... Todd Cavallaro was there. So just, you know, Mako's a good dude. I'll never forget the first time.
So the sky whammy is just
just a stick fake. Okay. And I'll tell you a quick story. Okay. I'll tell you a couple stories.
All right, please.
So first time I used it on a broadcast was 2004 when I joined WMAR. So, and I can't remember what game it was. I think it might have been Hopkins-Syracuse. If not, it was Maryland-Navy. But someone threw a sky whammy. And I'm like, on the replay, I'm like, and there's, you know, let's say it was Mikey. I don't think it was Mikey Powell, but I'm like, let's just say it was, for argument's sake, it was Mikey Powell, sky whammy, gets around top side and sticks it. The defense is looking at him. Scott Garceau looked at me like I was from outer space. And Keith Mills, who was the third in the booth, was like, it's a ball fake. It's a stick fake. It's like, you lacrosse guys and all your nicknames for things. And so it's like, they weren't mad or anything. It was just like sky whammy. So that was the first time, I'm pretty confident, anyone ever heard that on television. I think I gave Mako credit right then and there. Another real quick, so that was a broadcasting story, but let me tell you a really funny Chris Macon story. The guy's a character. And first of all, he had a younger brother named Stuart. And Stuart and Chris and Carmen Cavallo, another esteemed teammate from back then, nicknamed them the Niles and Frazier from the television show. Frazier was on Cheers, and then Niles was his brother. So he nicknamed them Niles and Frazier with peace and love, peace and love. But we in 93, we took a trip to England to play a handful of exhibition games.
Did you go to Manchester?
We went to Bath, Manchester, and then we ended up in London, okay? So we lost in the semifinals that year in North Carolina in College Park. A couple days later, end-of-year party, and then right from the end-of-year party, we're going to BWI to get on British Air and fly over to hop across the pond, as they would say, all right? So then we get to Heathrow, and then we have like a 4 or 5 hour bus ride to Bath, right? Then the next day is our first game. Well, we're playing basically our opponents for those four games, because I think we played one game against the English under 21 team, but three of the games were played against guy. They were using that as training camp for the English national team because 94 was a World Games year. So we're playing England in essence. And we go to our first game at Bath. I mean, we're all, you know, tired and other things. And I just remember John Haws, our defensive coordinator, called us in. And Halsey didn't say a whole lot. When Halsey spoke, everybody listened, right? So he's like, hey, listen, guys, listen. You know, I mean, you can come out here. You can go through the motions. You can treat it like a big joke. And you get run off the field. Or you can show some pride. You know, for Johns Hopkins and for yourselves, and let's get a good warm up in and let's play a good game. These guys want to, and it was true, man. The English guys were chomping at the bit to kick our butts, and he's like, so you know, let's get it together, let's go, and we're all kind of like, okay, yeah, and then all of a sudden, Mick goes like, no taxation without representation.
In the huddle,
yeah. It's like no taxation without representation, and Halsey's trying to be, and even he just starts cracking up. We're all dying laughing.
So that's what Mika wanted to use to fire up the team, yeah. Playing the British.
I don't know if he was doing it to be funny or to be motivational or whatever, but it was one of the funniest things I've ever heard in my life. So that's my Chris Macon story. Mako, thank you for the sky whammy. I've gotten a lot of use out of it, as others have over the years, and you are getting your proper recognition as the godfather of the sky whammy.
And that is the oral history of the sky whammy.
That's it.
All right, Dix, let's get a couple of your thoughts, your Tuesday takeaways on a few other games, and we'll be real quick about this. First game from the Big Ten, Penn State gets a 12-4 win in the Horseshoe. I was surprised by this result, that Penn State would win by 8 goals on the road.
Yeah, and if you're Ohio State, obviously you're scuffling right now, but you got to feel good about some of the things that you did in this game. Only, I think it was 12 turnovers for Ohio State. Penn State had 13. Didn't face off great, 7 out of 20 against Gerard Arcari, but that's not, you know, awful. The biggest, though, is Colby Kinese for Penn State had 16 saves. He was really, really good in this game. So Ohio State's been struggling offensively. They're struggling at the faceoff dot, and you put those two together, they just can't play the tempo that they want to play. Last year, Jake Withers gave them so many extra possessions that it wasn't funny. They miss him, obviously, but they did have possession time. They did get quality shots. Colby Kinese was just fantastic in this game. And then hence, you know, defensively, I think Ohio State, They aren't the team that they were a year ago. They still have Ben Randall. They still have Eric Evans, Freddie Freibot. So they've got a lot of cast back from last year. What they don't have back, though, is Tom Carey in Cage. But I do think that their goalie made 12 saves on Saturday. So, you know, it's not – it was just one of those days where the shots just weren't dropping. Josh Kirsten made 12 saves. It was just Colby Kinese was really, really good. So, but Ohio State, their backs are to the wall. You know, they are. Penn State, on the other hand, they've played without Grant Amon, you know, all season long. And I love the balance of their offense. 7 different guys scored goals. 9 different guys had a point against Ohio State. Ryan Keenan's playing really, really well. Kevin Hill's is a good player. Dylan Foltz, you know, an attackman, has really upped his game. And Matt O'Keefe, it's not the Matt O'Keefe show. He scored one goal. So defenses are really keying on him. So, you know, great win for Penn State. 1-0 to start off conference play. But Ohio State, the 12-4, yeah, it's a bad score, but that game could have been and was a little closer than that score would indicate.
A game that wasn't nearly as close as I thought it would be in the CAA. Towson gets whooped at Hofstra. Hofstra gets a 9-3 win. What happened there? We'd been talking about the out-of-conference schedule that Towson was playing and how it was preparing them to make a run through the CAA, and that just did not happen. The Flying Dutchman, the pride.
I don't think they're the Flying Dutchman anymore.
The pride would not let that happen.
Yeah. And when I saw this score, I was taken aback. I really, really was. When you consider, because we've been saying, let's just wait until Towson gets into CAA play. Yeah. They're still the pride of the CAA.
But Hofstra is the pride of the CAA.
Yes. Very well played, sir.
Thank you.
But I think, and you don't want to take anything away from Hofstra. In this game, Ryan Tierney was terrific. 4 goals. Dylan Alderman had a huge year last year. He chipped in with a goal. You know, they played a very good lacrosse game. And also, you forget that they've got an All-American goaltender in Kincannon, a guy who can just make a ton of saves, Jack Kincannon. So he made 7 saves in this game. The Hofstra defense played incredibly well, but Towson was without some of their better players.
Yeah, so it's released on Tuesday. Ed Lee from the Baltimore Sun wrote a story, and Inside Lacrosse followed up on it, picked it up, that 3 of their players, Sid Yule, who may be their best defenseman, their leading scorer, John Mazza, and another player, offensive player, Dylan Kinnear, have been suspended indefinitely for violating some team rules, and they did not play at Hofstra, which could have been some of the reason for such a lopsided outcome.
Yeah, and in a team that was getting better offensively but still doesn't have the firepower that they had last year, losing a guy like Mazza is huge.
He was their leading returning scorer and is still their top scorer on the year.
And then you've got Sid Yule, you know, Chad Patterson's a really good defender. But Yule, yeah, I mean, he's there. You could call him the number one cover guy.
He may have been the guy who should have been covering Ryan Tierney.
He could have been. You know, and then Kinnear is a guy who, you know, he's a role player, but he chips in.
Contributes.
And makes things happen. So you go up to Hofstra minus those 3 pieces, and you get an inspired Hofstra team who's good. You know, they can play. That's what you get, you know. So hats off to Hofstra. Huge win. And, you know, again, this I think I may have mentioned it last week. This game was the CAA regular season finale a year ago. Now it's the first game. So I'm not saying that the outcome would have been different for Towson, but what if they would have been playing Fairfield or Delaware or something like that? Maybe they could have gotten by. But again, these suspensions right now are listed as indefinite, so who knows if and when these guys will return.
Moving to the NEC.
The NEC.
Robert Morse, top 20 team, got beat by Bryant 10-7, and it was at Robert Morse, so tough place to play. Big win for Bryant, who now seems to be in control of the Northeast Conference.
Yeah, and you tend to always forget about Bryant because, Robert Morris has beaten Penn State this year, and they've played they played Rutgers tough. Scarlet Knights beat them. So whenever you have an upstart, you know, an underdog, it's always sexy, and you always root for them. But the neck, you always forget about Bryant, you know, how well-coached they are, and they have really, really good players and a great system. Remember the run to the NCAA quarterfinals a couple years ago? They're still the king of they still rule the roost in the Northeast Conference, and that's a really, really nice win for Bryant.
In the Patriot League, Bucknell went to West Point and got a 10-7 win. Bucknell's playing some really good lacrosse. They have a big game Wednesday night, as this drops Wednesday morning, against Yale, which will be a really good test for the Bison.
And Bucknell continues to excel, and Will Sands is a very, very special player. Army, I just can't figure these guys out. With everything that they returned from a year ago, I think it's they just really miss Johnson, their best playmaker from a year ago, the attackman. His name's escaping me. I'm having another senior moment.
It's the lasagna.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. It's the tryptophan in the lasagna. That's
just the carbs.
So, she drained the meat, right? I mean, like she there's not like a lot. There was not a lot of grease in there, so it's very lean.
That's good.
Lean ground beef, delicious. Lean sausage.
But Army's not the same team they were a year ago.
They're not. They're
missing something.
Even though you had David Sims, and even though you have Glesner, and you got Barreto in the goal, and Surtical on defense, there's really no creator on the attack for Army. That's what they miss the most from last year's team, and it's come back to bite them quite a bit in 2018 so far.
And then one super notable result from the ACC.
Super notable?
Yeah,
I mean, super notable. I
mean, you know, Duke escaped crosstown rival and arch rival UNC 11-10, but the real one was Syracuse. Syracuse 10-6 winners over Notre Dame in the Dome. Cuse, don't look now, but they're 3-0 in the ACC with just one game against North Carolina left to play.
And
they're gonna be the top seed in the ACC tournament.
When
who would have thought that at the beginning of the season?
Well, when you lose at home to Albany and Hopkins, you basically get run out of your precious building.
Your barn.
You know, that raises a lot of red flags, but, man, you got to give Syracuse a lot of credit. You know, outlasting Duke 15-14, and then at home this weekend against Notre Dame. I mean, the last time the Irish were up in the Dome, it was a 10-goal victory for the South Benders. Two things in this game. One, extra man. I think Notre Dame was 0 for 8, 0 for 9.
0 for 8.
And they were legit calls. I mean, I watched this game, and they were legitimate calls against Syracuse. And it's not something you see in the Dome every day. I mean, the Dome, the faithful
did not
like
it. Wait, are
you
saying Syracuse tends to get some calls to go their way when they're playing in the Dome?
Sure.
I knew it.
Or 50-50s, you know, might not get the flag.
Yeah.
But Notre Dame, like, not only were they like 0 for 8, 0 for 9, but like as pointed out by Mike Corey was calling the game, you know, he was like, they're not even getting shots off. You know, they're not even getting looks or making the Syracuse defense rotate. The other thing is Ryder Garnsey is hard for me to figure out.
Doesn't seem to be the same player he was at this time a year ago.
I think he's just trying to do too much. And I think he's a wonderful player. I think he's incredibly talented. But there was a reason why Kevin Corrigan didn't start him against Maryland, and he wasn't playing as much in the early season games. Brendan Gleeson was out with an injury. Does Brendan Gleeson mean that much to the Notre Dame EMO to have them go 0-8 or 0-8? I'm not really sure, but I just see Ryder Garnsey trying to do a little bit too much. There were times where he was forcing it. There were times where he was whipping, you know, skip passes, but they were almost like shots with the velocity. And so it just looks like he doesn't fit right now with Notre Dame. You know, Costa Beal, a terrific player. Pierre Byrne, really, really good player. But, and that could be the other, you got to give a lot of credit to the Syracuse defense.
Yeah, sure.
I think Bomberry makes a huge difference for them in the defense.
Tyson
Bomberry makes a huge difference for them defensively, communicating, keeping them tight.
Nick Mellon.
That allows Nick Mellon to do what he does best, and that's hunt down other attackmen and really play that one-on-one style, very physical, aggressive style. So hats off to Syracuse. You know, I sit there and you kind of talk about what Notre Dame didn't do well. I think you need to give Syracuse credit with
Absolutely.
What they did do well. And, yeah. And offensively, I thought they were very opportunistic.
Again, great win for Syracuse, who is in the driver's seat in the ACC right now. Dix, you know what you need after a big plate of lasagna? More protein.
I would love a Trimino.
Trimino.
I thought there was going to be some here today.
We're working on it.
Would they send it Pony Express? Is that why it's taking so long to get here?
Trimino protein-infused water has 7 grams of whey protein and essential B vitamins to fuel your game. No sugars, no carbs, and only 28 calories. Trimino is ideal before, during, or after your workout. And it tastes great, as we know. Comes in 7 delicious flavors, including 3 new ones, citrus orchard and raspberry limeade. You can grab one at CVS or in your local retailer or always on Amazon.com. Trimino increases energy and endurance and even curbs your appetite. Play hard, not hungry. Protein has never tasted so good. All right, this week's Maverick Media Poll is out. Penn State is the biggest mover, moves up 6 spots after their win in the Horseshoe. They move from 21st, which was just out of the top 20, to 15th. So here's our top 10. It starts with the Dane Train, for the sixth week in a row, I think.
Without Connor Fields, beat Stony Brook 13-7.
And Justin Ray was out, too.
Justin Ray as well. And then Fields only played the first half against Harvard last week, and the Dane train still continued to chug along. Cole Johnson, by the way, is the Army attackman. So I had the last name right. I just couldn't think of his first. Cole Johnson.
Terps remain number two. They had a 13-5 win over Michigan. They had it was 6-5. They scored their last seven goals of that game.
Turning point in that game, Michigan had a shot clock against them, and it was winding down. Feed came up top, and a Michigan midfielder corralled the loose ball instead of shooting it, like backed up with it 10 yards to the midfield line or right before the midfield line and dropped the ball. And then he's on his heels playing defense, and Sean Harrison from Maryland, short stick D mid, he picked it up and went down and beat him and stuck a goal, and Michigan was not the same after that. That was a huge momentum-shifting play for the Terps.
Number three is Yale. They had a nice win over Penn, 12-6. They play Bucknell tonight, and that'll be a key out-of-conference game for them. I like the Yaleys in that one. Number four, Denver.
The Yaleys?
Yeah, the Yaleys.
The Elis.
Elis. The Bulldogs.
Eli. Yeah.
Call them any Yaleys. Of those. So, the Yaleys.
You sound like the Nard Dog. Yaleys. Nard Dog. But he's a Cornell guy.
Oh, man. We'll talk about Cornell in a minute.
Okay.
They slid into the top 10. Number four is Denver. They had a one-goal win over Georgetown. That was closer than I thought it would be, but a good win for them on the road coming east.
Georgetown's a quality team, and they were actually up in that game 3-1 at half, and I think they had a 5-3 lead in the fourth period. And then, you know, Denver just does what Denver does. Trevor Baptiste does what Trevor Baptiste does. I think Baptiste got the fourth goal to make it 5-4.
Goal.
Yeah, so what a great player.
The Blue Jays slid up a spot to number five, while Duke slipped one from five to six.
Hmm.
Villanova is number seven team in the country, but they're also the number one team in the country. Did you watch the game last night?
I watched the first half. It just had it had the feeling. My favorite part of March Madness is the one shining moment video. But with YouTube now, you don't have to stay up until midnight or 12:15 to catch it. It didn't when
Dante DiVincenzo.
DiVincenzo
from Slazano.
When he was going off.
Wilmington, Delaware product.
Tower Hill?
Wilmington, Delaware product. Slazano.
You didn't go to Tower Hill?
He did not.
Why would you not go to Tower Hill?
I don't know.
Don't he know that's where you went and set all those punting records?
You want to go to Catholic school.
I got you. It didn't have a feel that Michigan was going to be able to make a run or overcome. So I went to bed. And
Michigan got off to a great start.
Yeah, they
and
did.
Then, no, Villanova.
Wagner.
God, he looked like Christian Laettner for a while. And then all of a sudden, DiVincenzo starts going, and he looked like Kobe Bryant.
He looked true.
He had the best game.
He pulled up and hit that three, like a foot behind the three-point line. I'm like, damn, this guy's feeling it.
Yeah, so, the white Mamba.
He looks like he's got an attitude as well.
He's got some swag, that's for sure.
Good for him.
He's a good player.
Yeah.
So Villanova is also the number seven lacrosse team.
Wow.
The Wildcats are on a roll.
Yep.
Number eight, Syracuse, slid up a couple spots after their win. Number nine, Rutgers. Rutgers holds tight at number nine.
I think that's fair.
Yeah, that is. That's a testament to how strong that program is. So they can lose a game and not slip out of the top 10. And then the Nard Dogs' favorite, number 10, Cornell, Big Red. They have three straight wins.
Yeah.
And they've scored 20 or plus goals in each of those games.
They're rolling.
They are firing it.
They're rolling. But
the Big Red Machine.
I don't want to burst your bubble. Well, I'll get to it later because you want my top 10 now, right?
Yeah, give me your top 10.
So number one, Albany, two, Maryland, three, Yale, four, Denver, five, Hopkins, six, Duke, seven, Villanova, eight, Syracuse, nine, Rutgers. Number 10, I've got Notre Dame.
Okay.
And I'll tell you
the identical top nine.
Is that okay? And then Notre Dame is. So my next three would be Loyola, Virginia, Cornell. And I just think Notre Dame could beat all three of those. They have beaten Virginia, but I think that right now Notre Dame could beat Loyola, and I think they could beat Cornell. Here's the other thing, too.
I'll give you that. That seems reasonable.
Cornell, I like Cornell. I think they're a very good team. Not in love with their wins, especially the last three. Penn, 20-13. Penn's Jekyll and Hyde. Air Force, 23-5. Dartmouth, 22-11. Air Force is a little bit of a mess.
Yeah.
Dartmouth is, you know, improving, but they're still the bottom of the Ivy League. I think we're going to learn a lot about Cornell over the next couple games.
You can find out Harvard, this weekend.
Harvard, then they have Cuse, then at Lehigh. I think that's a nice three-game stretch right there. to see if Cornell has some staying power. I think they will. Just for right now, you know, March or whatever. No, we're in April. First week in April, I don't have them in my top 10.
Another team that's not in your top 10, Dix, that a caller.
We got another call?
Yeah, and set the record straight.
It's like two calls.
For
it's a record.
The lacrosse world is Bellarmine. We have a call from Tano from Louisville, Kentucky, who, after last week's call about the proper pronunciation of Quinnipiac, wanted to set the record straight with Bellarmine. And here's Tano's call.
Hey, this is for the DeFi and Dixie podcast. This is Tanner from Louisville, Kentucky. I just want to correct the entire lacrosse community on the pronunciation of Bellarmine. It is not Bellarmine, Bellarmine. It is Bellarmine. You don't pronounce the E at the end. Love the podcast, guys. Thanks.
All right, so there you have it. Thank you, Tano, for calling.
I actually appreciate that.
Yeah, they say it wrong around here, too.
I say it wrong all the time.
Yeah, people, a lot of Bellarmine.
Yeah. Bellarmine.
Bellarmine.
Yeah.
But Bellarmine.
It's great. That's
Louisville.
Great. Thank you for
people
the
people say Louisville, too. It's Louisville.
Yeah.
Louisville.
Louisville.
Louisville. Yeah, thank you. Thank you for the call.
Thank you for the call. And
appreciate that.
Thank you for listening, first and foremost.
Absolutely.
Now, how do you say NCAA sanctions when you talk about Louisville?
This is a Bellarmine.
Oh, man. That's right. Well, we're talking so much about Louisville, and it's Rick Pitino.
They're trying to clean things
no
up
idea.
Down there.
He had no idea.
Clue. He can't believe that he keeps
no
hiring these
idea. People of questionable character.
Felons, basically. but I like their new coach. I like the Chris Mack hire. That's a good move for them.
You think it's a good move for him? I mean, he came from Xavier, right? Xavier.
Did you see the contract that he signed?
Oh, is that right?
It's massive. It's 7 years, and I think it's 7 years, $28 million or something like that. For $4 million a year, I'm guessing Xavier maybe I'm paying him about $1.5 million.
Dude, that's like Pitino was making that in a week.
$2.5 million.
Pitino was making
that.
He's got
7 years though.
We gotta get
7 years.
That is job security, and that'll give him time to rebuild the program then. Are they on any type of NCAA probation?
They will be.
Okay.
I think they will be.
But I guess what I'm trying to say is we need to get Geraldo Rivera, and we need to find Rick Pitino's vault so he can, much like Geraldo Rivera tried to open up Al Pacino, Al Capone's vault.
Yeah.
Max got to go after that Pitino money and his Colonel Sanders suit that we wear on the sideline, the all white with the red tie.
Okay. We're going off the rails here. So let's refocus here, and let's talk about if you wanted to buy some of this gear, where would you go?
Could I buy a Rick Pitino, Colonel Sanders suit on Sideline Swap?
You might be able to.
Okay.
Sideline Swap. I know that's where lacrosse players can go to buy and sell their gear. You can shop heads, helmets, shafts, and gloves up to 70% off, or snag hard-to-find college gear. And all purchases are backed by Sideline Swap's buyer guarantee. Head to SidelineSwap.com. That's SideLineSwap.com. SidelineSwap.com, or download the iPhone app today. All right, Dix, let's preview the weekend ahead with our usual five to watch this week. I couldn't do five. There are seven games.
Wow.
Featuring top 20 matchups this weekend. So we'll start with tonight's game. Number 14, Bucknell at number 3, Yale.
Where's that game being played?
At Yale.
Okay. So on Reese Field, Ben Reeves, Jackson Morrill, the defense for Yale playing a whole lot better. Will Sands for Bucknell. Terrific. Great out-of-conference matchup.
Yeah. I like the Yaleys in that one. As I
said. The Yaleys.
Here we go. In the Patriot League, number 11, Loyola at number 17, Lehigh.
Great game on tap. Pat Spencer, will he draw the defense of Craig Chick? Chick can play close. He can play pole. That'll be interesting to watch.
Number 4, Denver at number 7, Villanova. Top 10 matchup in the Big East.
How about that?
Yeah.
And that's at Villanova, right?
Villanova.
Yeah, so I think we got some crummy weather expected again for this weekend. If not snow, then cold enough for it. I'm sick of it. I really, really am.
Yeah, me too.
Baptiste, obviously, at the faceoff dot for Denver. Lowest goal scoring total in the history of Denver lacrosse since Tierney's taken over.
I saw that.
It was 7, and then the 6 goals against Georgetown, lowest offensive output. You take Trevor Baptiste away from Denver, and they might be bottom 10, if not outside the top 10, I think. I think him getting them so many possessions, and they've got some injuries now as well. Sapinski's down with an injury, Denver, that is. And Villanova, man, I mean, they've been a real surprise this season. You look at the wins that they have, Yale, Penn State. They lost to
Marquette this weekend.
Smoked Marquette, great opener. I'll tell you what, man, Rutgers is like praying that Marquette doesn't make the Big East tournament this year, because the last 2 years they've stolen that bid. So that'll be a real nice game on the main line.
In the ACC, number 6 Duke at number 12 Notre Dame at 4 p.m. on ESPNU.
Yeah, I mean, Notre Dame, they need a win big time, and they need to figure some things out offensively. You always say if you get good face-offs and you get good goaltending, Notre Dame's really, really dangerous. Well, they got good facing off against Syracuse, and I thought Schmidt played okay against the Orange, and they still lost. I think they got to tighten some things off offensively, and Duke's been a little underwhelming the last couple of weeks. Losers at home by a goal to Syracuse, and then a win's a win in Division I lacrosse, and Duke got it against a very hungry North Carolina team this past weekend. So that'll be a real good game.
In the Ivy League, number 19 Harvard at number 10 Cornell.
I mean, we'll see if the Big Red can keep up that scoring streak, 20-plus goals. Really like Christian Knight in the goal for Cornell. He gives him a real mature force. I had an opportunity to meet him over the winter out on at a local establishment, and a real nice guy. And then Harvard, Cheek, he's the leader there, and they came back down to earth a little bit, got run over by the Dane train midweek last week. So, but that's a crucial Ivy League matchup. Ivy League's wide open right now, I think. I take that back. Yale has established themselves, I think, as the main threat. But then
third place in the Ivy League is
yeah.
Open.
And will this game be, another 8-9 goal blowout? The Ivy League's been defined by blowout so far in 2018.
Couple of Big Ten games.
Mm-hmm.
Number 18, Michigan at number 9, Rutgers, Sunday at noon on ESPN.
Yeah. Chris Cotter has a call with Ryan Boyle, I think, if I'm not mistaken. And I know I exchanged a couple of texts with Chris yesterday, and I know he's real excited for it. Michigan's only Big Ten win is against Rutgers, and that came back in 2015. So it's been a minute since Michigan has won a Big Ten game. They're going to be facing a very motivated, very ticked off Rutgers team. But I do think that Michigan is vastly improved. It's not every day you go into South Bend and beat Notre Dame on their home field, especially in the midweek. So that'll be a real good game.
And finally, number 2, Maryland at number 15, Penn State, Sunday night lacrosse on the Big Ten Network, 7 o'clock.
Me and Joe B will have it for you. It's funny. When you look at Maryland's records, it says that they have never lost to Penn State in men's lacrosse. You look at Penn State, it says that the Nittany Lions have beaten them 2 or 3 times, but it dates back to like 1918.
Huh.
So it's funny, the two sports information offices can't get on the same page. But right away, Arcari versus Shockey at the faceoff dot, or will we see Austin Henningsen? We saw him on last weekend against Michigan, and he did quite well. How will Penn State be able to defend Connor Kelly? Michigan seemed to have it figured out, as he only had 2 assists against the Wolverines, but then again, he was playing against his former defensive coordinator, Kevin Connery, who knows him probably better than any head coach in the conference, because he spent so much time with him at practice and all the other situations. That'd be a real good game. That's going to be a terrific game. I love the balance of the Penn State offense. Maryland's starting to get a little bit more scoring from secondary sources. They need to continue to develop that.
And I'll be looking forward to having you and Joe B in my living room Sunday night again.
Thank you for the invite. We appreciate it.
So as we look ahead to those games, one thing I want to mention is our first bracketology is coming out tomorrow, Thursday.
No kidding.
On InsideLacrosse.com. We're halfway through the season, a little bit more than halfway through the season. We're already turning our attention to May and May Madness.
Well, it's always, every year is kind of the same thing. Once the Super Bowl ends, okay, lacrosse is starting up. Okay, like regular season games. Once the NCAA men's basketball championship is finished, it's like, okay, now we can turn our full attention to lacrosse and its conference races. So it's hard to believe that you April 1, April 2 is when the NCAA men's basketball season ends and teams are already more than halfway through their college lacrosse season.
And I'm a big college basketball fan and lacrosse fan.
Oh, we know.
So not only does the end of the basketball season coincide with the meat of the lacrosse season, as meaty as that lasagna you just had,
but it's a lot of meat.
It also coincides with the beginning of baseball season. And right. That takes us to our give and go, Dix.
Okay.
So how do you, I need to know how you fall. Are you in that camp of, you know, you're a lacrosse guy, you're not allowed to like any other sports, you have to be only a lacrosse guy, or do you allow yourself to, you know, be a fan of multiple sports and enjoy a national pastime?
Well, just like, you know, listen, just like you want multi-sport athletes as you know, youth and high school players, I like all sports. And, you know, I'm not a huge baseball guy, but I have two, it wasn't last year, but the year before, when the O's went to the wild card game against Toronto and lost up at Rogers Center, I probably watched the most baseball I've ever watched. And
that was a fun team to watch.
It's a fun team. You know, Manny Machado, Adam Jones.
J.J. Hardy.
J.J. Hardy. I like the announcers. I like Gary Thorne. Yeah. I love
Joe Angel and those guys.
Hey, Joe Angel. Yeah. Smiling outside. Coming up here at the club, talking about Showalter in the club. And this is a good ball club. Pitch over the middle, strike, 2-2's a count. I started watching that show Brockmire. You ever seen Brockmire yet? Hank Azaria?
Uh-uh.
So he's a Major League Baseball announcer. I want to say he's Cincinnati or St. Louis, like in the Midwest somewhere. Something. And then he just loses his mind on the radio because he never knew that his wife was like a mistress or a dominatrix.
Oh, wow.
And so he just locks himself in the broadcast booth and like downs a fifth of Jack or something like that and just loses his mind and gets fired. So he gets relocated. I can't remember the city, but he's in the minor leagues. And he's like, so the first season, I think it was the first season was last year. I think it might be on FX. But like guys
Hank Azaria,
like,
I'd watch this show.
Oh, he's terrific. Amanda Peet is his boss who owns the minor league baseball team. Joe Buck was in an episode or two, a couple other notables that I'm escaping. But anyway, like the baseball announcer is like, lacrosse is so fast paced and
yeah, baseball like, has baseball, a rhythm and, yeah. And that's why I just have it on in the background most of the time.
Yeah. And you can, you know, yeah.
You cook dinner too and you miss something. You're like, oh, he's still batting.
But, yeah. But, and then also too, like if you turn your head, like all of a sudden there's two outs, you're like, oh, how'd they get out? Like I wasn't even paying attention. But Joe Angel's radio, Gary Thorne is television. I really, really like Jim Palmer as a baseball analyst.
You know who else really likes Jim Palmer?
Who?
Jim Palmer.
I know. And that's the knock on him. But let me tell you something, because I like to watch announcers from every sport to try to pick up things that I could do better or incorporate into when I call lacrosse games. And Palmer, the way he takes you inside of pitching is really cool. Like, okay, I think he's going to throw this pitch because of this, or this is his out pitch, or he doesn't want to have to go to this, or, you know, and Palmer pitched at a time when complete games were, I mean, he was going, you know, he was completing 30 games.
Yeah, there weren't get to through six innings, yeah, bring in a
six,
setup man,
like
then
five.
Then a setup man, yeah. And then get to your closer.
Yeah, so I really like Jim Palmer. So anyway, to answer your question, I do watch baseball. I don't make a habit of it a whole lot, but, you know, summertime, kids get done practice or whatever, and you come home and you get something to eat.
Yeah, it's just
you
on.
Pop the ball game on.
All right, so here's the question. Give and go, I'm going to tell you who my three favorites are.
Three favorites of what?
Orioles.
Orioles, okay. You made
all-time
mention.
Orioles.
All right.
Pretty basic list. You know, Cal Ripken, number one. Loved him, man. He was my idol when I was a kid. Loved watching him play and then being able to really, because his career was so long, as an adult, be able to go to as many games as I want, see him play and stuff. Really, what a career. Eddie Murray. Just a chance when the whole stadium would be Eddie, mm-hmm. Eddie, when he get up. And then I really want to say Manny Machado.
Okay.
I love watching this guy play. I think he has the potential to be a Cal Ripken type of player if he stays in Baltimore.
He ain't staying in Baltimore.
I know. But he is a five-tool guy who is just a pleasure to watch, and he can do anything on a baseball field.
Mm-hmm.
Another choice, I was as a pitcher, I loved Mike Mussina. Remember him?
I could stand Mussina.
He was our starting pitcher for like the whole 90s and was a punk.
Then he bolts to the Yankees.
He was anything but a punk.
He's a jerk.
Oh, my gosh. He did play for the Yankees, though. Who's the Orioles one paying?
He was one of those. I think he was one of those like grumpy guys always with the media, wasn't he? Lucina? No.
No.
Back when I was covering the Bay with the Orioles, saying we're in St. Louis this one time and caught this guy.
All right, so give me yours. Who are your all-time favorite?
Well, first of all, I mean, I can't argue with Cal Ripken and Eddie Murray, but I could.
You're allowed to say the
you're
same
such a
guy.
Cliche when it comes to sports, though. Notre Dame football, Duke basketball. Oh, wow, way to step out on a limb. The day you come in.
Well, my favorite teams, you mean Alabama football and Villanova basketball are my favorites now. Is that what you're trying to say?
The day you come in with a Central Florida football shirt and a San Diego State basketball hat, that's when I'm like, this is a real sports fan. No, I'm teasing, but not really. All-time Orioles. I mean, Cal and Eddie, obviously. Okay. I remember going to games when I was younger, and when Eddie would get up. This was old Memorial Stadium, and they play the charge. You're like, okay, Eddie, let's get it. And then he would get out. You'd be like, dude, you suck. Like, but then as you grow up, you're like, yeah, you know, when you hit the ball 30% of the time,
you go into the Hall of Fame.
Pretty darn good. You go to the Hall of Fame. And
did you ever see Brooks Robinson play?
On video.
I remember seeing 70 him
World
play
Series
against
the Reds.
A couple of games.
Oh, yeah?
When I was very young, yeah. Man, he was at the end of his career, but one of the most beloved. You know, he lived in the Colonnade across the street from Hopkins.
No way.
Homewood Field, yeah.
Really?
Yeah, I used to see him a couple times. He'd be like walking around the track or jogging around the track.
I never saw that.
Yeah.
Were you, did you ever go over to Polo Grill with him and enjoy a fried lobster tail? That was the
He's a crab cake guy. What are you talking
about? Yeah, you're right. You're right. Now, Eddie's a guy that had a contentious relationship with the media, but I think it was more
because
he felt like he was mistreated. And because when I interned at Channel 2 way back, MAR, back after graduating from college, I got to know one of his best friends who was a producer. And he told me a lot of great stories, you know, about Eddie and, you know, like, so it's like, and maybe I'm being unfair to Mike Mussina, like what I think I know about Mike Mussina, maybe there's a backstory there that I'm not aware of. Favorite all-time Orioles. I love Adam Jones. I think he's terrific.
That's great. AJ.
I think he keeps everybody loose. I think he is a great player. And he came over when they got rid of Eric Bedard, right? Bedard was the pitcher. That demanded to be traded, so they traded him to Seattle.
Yeah.
And we got Adam Jones, and I want to say we got Nelson Cruz.
No, he came later.
No, Cruz was a free agent. Somebody else came over from the
Mariners.
Mariners.
I can't remember.
Anyway, Adam Jones.
I think we had like three players, and Adam Jones is one of them.
Yeah, Adam Jones. I'll also go Cal and Eddie, just like overarching. Eddie in particular. I mean, and when he came back for that second stint, that was great back in the 96, 97-ish time frame. Adam Jones, I'm trying to think. I mean, there's a lot of guys.
You mentioned Sidney Ponson before.
We were talking about Sidney Ponson, Scott Erickson, and Roberto Alomar were quite the Lotharios around town. And I used to live down on Bond Street right next to the Black Olive Restaurant. And there were more than one occasion, Brady Anderson would roll up in a limo with several several pieces of arm jewelry, if you know what I'm saying. I ran into him, like I literally ran into him.
Him being?
Brady Anderson on Halloween, back in the mid-90s. And
were you dressed as Cal?
I was dressed as a steroid syringe.
What are you implying? Those 50 home runs that one year?
Yeah.
It was a complete
seven home runs.
Anomaly?
12 home runs. 50 home runs.
Seven home runs. So you ran into him at Halloween?
Yeah, like literally we were outside of Max's on Broadway and I was talking to some friends and like, you know how you turn quick and you just run into somebody. I ran smack dab into Brady Anderson. And it was like running into, solid dude, physically, you know, just like boom, like, oh, sorry. He was like, hey, don't worry about it.
Did he go, I think that's Mark Dixon.
Yeah. Then he came and kicked my ass. good question. I really like Chris Hoyles, the catcher.
Yeah, Hoyles.
Thought he was a good guy. And I met him at the Inside Lacrosse. Remember Inside Lacrosse? We used to go to a ball game a year, and
yes,
we had a suite that one year. And yeah. Hoyles was like the designated Oriole to come in and
glad hand of everybody. I don't remember meeting Chris Hoyles, but
yeah, I think I even got an autograph from him. But I liked him as a player. I thought he was tough. My favorite Oriole of all time, Earl Weaver. Without question. Earl Weaver.
The former legendary manager of the Orioles.
Earl Weaver is my favorite Oriole of all time. And he just the attitude. And, man, watching those clips on YouTube that are uncensored and unedited and just, you know, you're here to F me. Your job is to come here. Oh, Earl, knock it off. You're paranoid. Don't you call me names. Don't you make it personal. He would kick
dirt on the face.
He would kick dirt. He would steal home plate. He would steal second base. He's basically
a mascot. He was like the Oriole bird who goes out between innings and steals a base.
And he was 2 feet tall. Yeah, and he would just get in the umpire's faces.
Earl of Baltimore.
He would turn his hat around. And, I mean,
he was a character.
He was fantastic.
But a great manager. It led him to a lot of successful seasons.
What do you say? The three-run home run was the Oriole. He started the Oriole way, right?
Yeah, three-run. Three-run home run. Get a couple guys on base and let your power hitters do the rest.
Yeah.
All right. If you got this far, we know you like this podcast.
How are we on time?
And if you like what you heard, please subscribe, leave a ratings on iTunes or however you listen, and please share it with a friend. Spread the good news. You can reach out to us on Twitter at DixonLacrosse or @D_fly or via email at dflynn@insidelacrosse.com. And don't forget, call in with your rant, comments, questions, your favorite Chris Macon story, 443-595-7020. That number again, 443-595-7020. Be sure to leave your name and where you're calling from. Also, don't forget to check out our other podcast here at Inside Lacrosse. We drop another podcast every single day during the season. Have a great week and enjoy the games.